Welcome everyone to today's talk on starting a news website from scratch, the trials, traumas, and triumphs. I'm Nan He, a board member of the club and your host for today. But before I begin, can I ask everyone to turn off your phones or switch them on to silent? Also, a reminder of an upcoming event. September 9th, we've got Andy Rothman talk about After the Fall, the Path Forward for China's Stock Market and Economy. So please come to that. I'm sure many of you have been swept up by the buzz surrounding Hong Kong Free Press when it started its crowdfunding appeal back in May, and watched the remarkable way this startup generated funds so quickly through countless backers from the community. For those unfamiliar with this initial phase of this young company, they managed to raise just under $600,000 by June, an amount that far exceeded their expectations. It wasn't just the way that the startup was financed, but the concept of what they're trying to do that also drew much attention, including its idealistic mission to being an independent news provider, but also a not-for-profit company, to avoid some of the commercial pressures that many of the local media face, which have contributed to media self-censorship concerns in Hong Kong. HongKongFP.com launched at the end of June. It's generated a strong readership since, with over 300,000 unique visitors and over 1.3 million page views in the starting month. The media entrepreneurs behind the portal, which includes Evan Fowler, have experienced various ups and downs since embarking on this journey. We're delighted to have its co-founder and editor-in-chief, Tom Grundy, to talk about those experiences today. About the speaker, prior to co-running the startup, Tom was a freelance journalist who ran the outspoken blog HongRong.com. His work, especially his coverage of Occupy Central Hong Kong last year, has also been featured in numerous local and international media outlets. And soon, he will also have a Master's of Journalism degree under his belt from the University of Hong Kong. Everyone, let's give a warm welcome to Tom Grundy of Hong Kong Free Press.
Thank you, Anna. Being quite fresh to all of this, I feel honored as much as I am humbled to be speaking today. So thank you very much to the Foreign Correspondents Club for the kind invite. I'd like to share as generously as I can the story of Hong Kong Free Press. I'll perhaps bore you with some background before we crack on. Long before Hong Kong FP, I once ran a multi-platform analog media empire from our family corner shop near Birmingham in Britain. As you might imagine, I was a pretty obnoxious 10-year-old mini Murdoch. But between a VHS newscast and a taped radio show and a handwritten newspaper, I had a monopoly on all family and pet-related news in Wensbury, and a circulation of literally ones of people. After a gap year in Africa at 19, I left for Leeds to study new media. In actually leaving Birmingham, I'd already won at life, so I could have just left it there. And new media, of course, in 2003, was interactive DVDs and Flash and Dreamweaver 8, so things have moved on. After graduating, I realized a few things about the industry which prevail today. The funding was in crisis, free labor was endemic, and the genie of news for free was firmly out of the bottle. I was indebted, my family weren't rich, so I literally couldn't afford to go into media. And so I bunkered down in teaching for a decade in Hong Kong, hoping things would improve in the industry. I saved my money, traveled around much of Asia, and freelanced on the side. During this time, I was also somewhat of a campaigner. As a teenager, I protested the closure of the local swimming baths. I tried to unionize my co-workers at IKEA later on, and I camped at the G8 and landed in Hong Kong only to join a lot of the protest movement here, organizing a demo in support of Snowden and attempting an arrest of Tony Blair at HKU for war crimes. His wife's in Hong Kong today at the Asia Society, and his spin doctor is here next week, but I can promise you I've no intention of causing a scene. It was then in 2012 that I launched an English news and culture blog, HongRong.com, and shortly afterwards a multimedia campaigning NGO for domestic workers, HK Helpers Campaign. It dawned on me that you can be more powerful being in control of the media spotlight instead of fighting to focus it on your cause. Through the internet, the barriers of entry, you know, to have a platform had been flattened and democratized, and the costs were next to nothing. So for many years, I remained more of an advocate or a citizen journalist. The Hong Rong blog was never monetized, but it was the first in English to stories like the Arowana case. I did a couple of investigations, and it had a few original stories that caused a kerfuffle. Its satire and photography sections were most popular, and it remains the birthplace of Hong Kong's annual Pillow Fight Day in April. I'm sure you've all been, but ridiculous name aside, it was never going to be a news hub for the city. And so the idea for Hong Kong Free Press came around last June. Things in the industry turns out only worsened, but I decided now or never. I quit my job, applied for permanent residency, and enrolled on a master's in journalism at HKU. My co-founder, Evan Fowler, and I wanted to build a new English news alternative for Hong Kong and fill a content and temporal void between Chinese and English. By way of its multi-channel funding and unique structure, it would be completely independent and as immune as possible from the political and commercial press freedom concerns that haunt the media in the region. It would be progressive but as impartial as possible in its hard news reporting, neither pro-democracy or pro-establishment, a truly local English news source for the city. But then, just after being inducted at HKU, my fellow classmates and I received somewhat of a baptism of fire and tear gas at a certain mass protest last year. As China's white paper was handed down exactly a year ago today, in fact, Occupy Central was dismissed as a flop, a plan for 2,000 people to have a sit-in on a closed road on a public holiday. And now the world's eyes were transfixed on the police overreaction as Occupy merged with the student boycott and gave rise to the politest protests on the planet, the Umbrella Movement. By accident, rather than design, I found myself constantly in the wrong place at the wrong time, or rather the right place at the right time if you're a reporter. So as news crews flew in, there was a desperate need for freelancers. Through Twitter, of all things, I ended up doing almost 100 broadcast and written and photography pieces for different outlets while studying. Right afterwards, on Christmas Day, in fact, I built the Hong Kong FP website in WordPress in Beijing, actually. The logo left a lot to be desired, so I had two designer friends help me. Next was the rather painful process of registering the company. As a non-profit, there are no shares. Nobody can buy a slice of Hong Kong Free Press. It's limited by guarantee. All the money goes back into the company. After registration, it took many more months to set up a bank account, which is probably one of the toughest obstacles now for any Hong Kong startup. And then we had a chicken and egg situation. We needed money, but to get money, you needed traffic, and to get traffic, you needed money. So we turned to crowdfunding. Fringebacker was in both Chinese and English. It had a good track record and was in Hong Kong dollars. They take 5%, but they handle everything for you. And we sought to raise $150,000 in a month. And we were thinking, you know, just four of us would be sharing a space at a Chinese outlet Stan News in Kwantung, relying mostly on contributor-driven Huffington Post-style kind of a platform we had in mind, and maybe doing a few rewrites on the side. But it seems donors wanted something more. We received the 150K within 36 hours and almost 600,000 in a month. And actually, it was all coming from quite small donations of, you know, $200 or $500. And it was mostly the Chinese community who seemed to want to see this, a sort of groundswell of grassroots support. So we doubled our number of staff. We accepted an offer from D100 to share office space at Cyberport rent-free. And over the years, I'd watched how, you know, various media had experimented with things like crowdfunding, events, merchandise, online ads, native ads, sponsorship, membership, and micro donations. None of them with a magic bullet, you know, none of them seemed to work. But we decided to try and do all of them with a view to them all adding up so we can pay the bills. And the bills are quite low. Pretty much all of our funds go on salaries. Our reporters and I are all paid the same for now, and although it's a fair bit more than the local average for a reporter, it's still low, and we want it to improve. Eva and I are quite adamant about fostering something a bit different, more inclusive and transparent, an open company culture where we're responsive to staff, freelancers are paid quickly, and the hierarchy is quite flat. Thus far, this is paying off, although at first we naively thought we could be self-policing, you know, with editing and make savings there. And to quote Zhang Zemin, this was too naive, as he was reprimanding Hong Kong journalists. It turns out we can't argue with centuries along precedent when it comes to editorial infrastructure. And that's something, you know, we're still sorting out. And we're changing things every week as we go along. Like any startup, settling on the right people is the biggest challenge. We now have a very good core team of fresh grads, all of whom are bringing something different to the table. They, our contributors, and many volunteers have put in blood, sweat, and tears from day one, because all of us kind of understand now that journalism has become a vocation. And being a startup, we're all having to do extra and take on extra responsibilities. During June, we ran things for about 3 weeks behind the scenes before going live, training, practicing, getting the system, style, and website right. We hit the streets during the reform vote and found very early on that we could beat the competition at least on speed once or twice a day. Since then, we've live blogged July 1st, CY Lung's Q&A at LegCo, Typhoon Linfa, and I think offered the best English coverage on a few topics like the HKU pro-vice-chancellor fallout, the Taiwan student movement, and the Chinese lawyer crackdown recently. And getting a balance of those different articles is quite delicate. You know, our resources are limited. For now, it's very tough to send one of our four reporters out for the day, as it would mean often losing a quarter of our content. But we're still doing a lot of original stuff. Our first one, a story about the leaked tape of Jasper Tang telling a racist joke, and the latest being evidence of slack security at the airport. We do a fair number of pickups from the Chinese press, filling that gap in, you know, Chinese and English. But even then, we're adding value, getting reactions, new angles, picking up the phone. We also can't ignore viral stories, the lighter stuff that gets people through the door. We segregate these silliest articles, you know, on the website, but we are online, and if we don't do a couple a day, we're dead. Everyone who works with us understands and has access to the analytics, the live view of what's happening on the website, who's looking at what, where they're coming from. It remains on a big screen overlooking the office throughout the day. And that live number might as well be my adrenaline levels or my heart rate, you know. And like it or not, you know, there's a big difference between what people say they want to read and what they actually click on, and we're probably all a bit guilty of it. Saying that, if we listen too carefully to the analytics, we might end up doing only cat stories. So, you know, we have to remain selective. Cyberport might be nearer to Llama than LegCo, but it's a good environment once you're there, and our costs are kept down using technology to be efficient. Like Quartz and others, we're trying to ensure we can run without a physical office if need be. We use encrypted Telegram to communicate, and Trello to manage our workflow. That's what the tool looked like this morning. And news meetings at 10:30 are still critical. But should something like Occupy happen again, we can all work from anywhere. We also have a cooperative approach, and we share contacts between us in a big spreadsheet. Hong Kong, in a sense, has been slow to adapt. On the English side of the industry, part of the sluggish approach to innovation may be the lack of competition, but any local newsroom that isn't embracing technology, social media, and the internet, and that isn't experimenting or understanding their audience through analytics, is going to have problems. Already, we've seen the death of some Chinese print titles this year, and many more might follow. And it's because they weren't keeping up with perhaps where the audience is and going to them. At launch, Hong Kong FP was on Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, Pinterest, Google+, YouTube, and many others through RSS. It may be a sad state of affairs, but for Hong Kongers, print is often what you've read online yesterday. Hong Kong has the highest penetration of smartphones and Facebook in the world, so we can't ignore it. As of last week, 1 in 6 people apparently are hopping on Facebook globally. And it's certainly where the majority of our traffic comes from. Our front door is Facebook, not our homepage. And that's a problem because the mysterious algorithms that reward engagement with visibility, by liking, commenting, clicking, and sharing on certain articles, they tend to get pushed into more news feeds and generate more traffic. So the sillier, more sensational stories tend to rise to the top. Or whilst Facebook is slowly eroding that visibility and pushing us to purchase the visibility through boosts. But despite all of this, Hong Kong Free Press is still set to jump on their self-hosted instant articles program because we have to and because others will, regardless of the very valid reservations and debates around it. And Facebook isn't the only threat, I guess. We were set up in a response to press freedom, but already suffered a cyber attack in the run-up to our launch. Today, we probably have the most secure news website in Hong Kong, and we haven't had any further trouble press freedom-wise. The only obstacle to our reporting has come from the government. On the launch day, we received an email from the Information Services Department declining our application to view the government information system. We did everything right. We have qualified full-time staff and office, press passes, limited company cards. It's just that we haven't a print license. The archaic attitudes of the government mean we are barred from accessing press releases or notifications about press conferences. Of course, the government are probably the last people who should be deciding who is media and who is not. And whilst there is a debate about bloggers and citizen journalists, we're in no such gray zone. Furthermore, it's fatal to our business if all our competitors have access and we don't. So 2 months in, by all measures, we're largely exceeding what we planned to do. We topped the first month's figures by reaching 500,000 unique visitors and 1.8 million page views in August alone, which is quite unheard of for a new website. But it's not without sacrifice. Looking after a company, it's kind of like being a new dad. You can't really leave it alone for a day. You sleep a lot less. You talk about it all the time, and you make a lot of mistakes yourself. We've accidentally referred to Carrie Lam as the chief executive. Please God, no. And I think I put MH360 into a headline for a good while instead of MH370. I've ended up dreaming in the content management system and have caught myself texting friends in house style. I suppose it happens. But the response is good, and tough times are ahead. We realize there are typos and the mistakes, and we've got very far to go. We also can't operate on a shoestring forever. Right now, I feel we're just demonstrating our potential. It's at its embryonic stage. With more money and resources, we'll be able to stick around and scale up to regional coverage, investigative stuff, and really embrace the unique opportunity that we have in Hong Kong. The relative freedoms we enjoy here make us well-placed, not just for reporting on China, but for Singapore and much of Asia. Kevin Lau said it's the best time for journalism and the worst time. we embarked on this because our glasses are half full. It may be happening more in Chinese, but all the grim news about the industry and press freedom aside, we're actually seeing a blossoming of new independent media in post-Occupy Hong Kong. And diversity in media is good. Healthy competition encourages us all to improve, and I think there is room for new players. Post 852, Stan News, Initium, Factwire, and Hong Kong Free Press now. More will come, and with an ongoing crackdown on media in the mainland and two elections on the horizon, the timing could not be more right. Thank you.
Thank you, Tom. Let's open up questions to the floor. If you can raise your hand and... Oh, there.
Sorry, Tom. I was just wondering, how are you going to address the funding issue going forward?
Yeah, I perhaps didn't talk about it enough, but we don't want to be reliant on any one income stream. So all of those things I mentioned, from micro donations to Bitcoin, making it as easy as possible for people to donate. Events, we've done a couple. We had a launch party here, and we're hoping they will all add up. And we're on, at the moment, 1.8 million page views. When we get to the magic number of 3 million, which should, if it continues, happen before Christmas, that's also when we can elicit our own advertising, and that will pay for much of it as well. We're selling merchandise as well today, folks. So if you see Del Boy here, the bull guy, he will sort you out with a T-shirt, so you can also contribute. But I think it's a question for the whole of the industry, isn't it? We could ask this of anyone. There is no magic bullet to it, but we should, if things continue, have some level of sustainability, hopefully in the next few months. But it is very tough for everyone. And I don't know if it'll always be rent-free. I don't know, if we're going to need accountants and all the other things.
Any more questions? And also, please reveal the media organization if you are with one. Over there.
I don't work for a media organization. Mm-hmm. How engaging are the pro-Beijing and the pro-Beijing people, the influencers with you? I'd imagine your platform's seen as a mainly anti-Beijing platform.
We've never had any comments really about its slant from either side, because we haven't done any editorials yet. We intend to, but we have had some issues in that originally, when we said it was going to be more of a citizen contributor affair, Huffington Post style, we were rallying people to jump on board with it as contributors. We ended up with 120. We only ended up bringing on a dozen or so, but all of them seemed to be on the more progressive or pro-democracy side. So we did start owning it a bit and said, we're a progressive news source. But we just couldn't get anyone on the pro-Beijing side to contribute. But we have had a couple of lawmakers on the platform, and we'd certainly open to it. We want a diversity of voices and to keep the platform open. But we haven't been attacked by anyone on that side at all.
Any more questions? Steve.
Tom, can I just pursue that matter? Because when you introduced this, you said, this is an independent platform. Mm. It's obviously not partisan in any party sense. But, I mean, is there a problem with being a pro-democracy oriented platform? I mean, you look at the conventional media, and in fact most of the other media, it does actually all have a stance, and yeah, people gravitate to it because of that stance. I mean, are you deliberately not trying to do that?
For now, I think maybe we're playing it a bit safer, but there is no intention, to take, I think, a stronger view with it. I think you're right, there is a spectrum in Hong Kong, and it's heavily weighted towards your more pro-establishment, especially in Chinese with all the pro-Beijing newspapers, and you just kind of have SCMP and Ming Pao in the middle, and very little on this side, bar Apple Daily. There is room for it, I think, to sort of give balance to that, but maybe not yet for us. And I think perhaps we could also have more of an impact or be stronger if we have more impartial stance, because so, as you know, so much of what happens in Hong Kong, simply presenting the facts, you know, exposes the absurdity of it without, you know, taking any stronger or more sensational line on it. Simply to tell what you know of what's going on, sort of does the job. Sunlight being the greatest disinfectant.
Any more questions? I got a gentleman there.
Hi. Hello. Thank you for that. And what is the employee culture at Hong Kong Free Press, and how do you foster that culture?
Well, like I say, we're trying to undo a few things in that we have quite a flat structure and it's cooperative. About 80% of what the team have put forward, we've adopted, and very few of us have that much newsroom experience, which is a help and a hindrance. So, you know, we haven't got preset ideas about how things should be, but we've also been naive about some other things, like I mentioned, with the editorial oversight. And, you know, in the beginning, we thought it was redundant to have news meetings. Now I don't understand how we can do without. So a lot of it, in the great British sense, you know, where I'm from, is muddling through. But I've probably never been so ill-informed about what's going on, because all I get to read and do at the moment 24/7 is Hong Kong Free Press. So I'm very much reliant on the team, you know, and us all working together to understand what's happening, what we're going to be covering today. And everyone has kind of had to get their hands dirty a bit with a bit of everything, you know, packing the rewards for the backers on Fringe Backer and doing a bit of everything. But that's true of a startup, I suppose. But yeah, we are trying to have a bit of a flatter approach and give people as much freedom as possible to report and cover what they want to do.
Lady there.
Hi, Vodine England. This whole talk and all the questions so far hasn't actually mentioned what to me seems to be the major competition, the South China Morning Post.
Try to avoid it.
It must have been deliberate on your part. And I guess I'm not alone in thinking that it would be nice to not need to go to the Post every day, and that, you know, if the Free Press could indeed scale up and get to the point where we didn't need to go to the Post, that would be interesting. What's that going to take?
To be the go-to, you know, place in the morning. I mean, it's very tough doing shift work, things like this. We are five kids in Cyberport, but it is scalable, like any startup. And that competition, I think, would be healthy for both parties, right? I think things have stepped up a bit on social media recently at the SCMP. I don't know if it's coincidence, but I think I've spoken before that, you know, there were concerns, you know, with some of the press freedom issues there, occasionally with the editorials and such, but competition's healthy, and we hope that if we can employ more people, we can get more stories up and have more of a 24-hour operation. It's very tough in the evenings at weekends at the moment. We're doing some trials with some news wires, but I don't know if we'll be able to afford that. That fills the gap, but I think steadily, you know, we could offer some meaningful competition. Yeah, of course. Yeah, I mean, the sky's the limit. So, we and a lot of the feedback we've gotten, people who've donated, they have made direct reference to, you know, their feelings about other media. So people want an alternative as well. I think we decided very early on too that we can't really compete, in that they've, you know, the main competitor, SCMP, they've got hundreds of staff and buildings and coffee makers and everything, and you know, we're just not going to be able to cover everything. And we kind of were trying in the first week, and it was a bit mad. And we now realize, you know, if the SCMP has something, or the Standard, and we're 5 hours behind and we can't get a new angle and there's no reactions to it and the horse is bolted, then we'll spend the time doing one or two other stories that no one else has got, because there's a big surplus of stories that don't get picked up in English at all.
Any more questions? Right at the back there.
I'm very interested in the technical aspects of what you're doing. So to publish a newspaper on the internet, is there a service provider or system specialist you can go to set up the nuts and bolts of making it happen?
Yeah, I just did it myself. It's all WordPress. So the same engine behind it is actually the blogging platform WordPress, but we made it look more like a news site. And there were some minor adjustments to a premium theme I purchased, but this is what I talked about, the great democratization and the barriers of entry coming down. It was extremely cheap to put up. We've got a few other technical sort of strings to our bow in that it's extremely secure because we've some volunteers who help with security, and we're the only outlet that has a secure PGP encrypted channel for people to get in touch. A lot of journalists have that, you know, in the wake of Snowden, but we have that you know, whistleblower channel for people to get in touch. But otherwise, you know, we chose WordPress. A lot of the staff are already familiar with it. It has its limitations. I know that the Facebook comments system winds a few people up, but you know, we chose that, I should mention, because that's a barrier to entry for, you know, trolls and 50 centers, and the level of penetration Hong Kong, you know, Facebook has in Hong Kong, and a lot of other big media moving on to Facebook comments, it sort of made sense to synchronize what's going on, you know, on the social networks to what's happening on the website. And in the coming months, they will apparently all synchronize, so we all see the same thing. There are some news sites who just don't have comment sections now because it's caused a lot of trouble. And the conversation goes on social media. I've digressed into comment system, but yeah, the technical setup is relatively simple in WordPress.
Any more questions?
Oh. I work in corporate communications, and actually conversations here before you started speaking, a lot of news organizations as well as the corporate side all looking at how the business model is changing, and I'm sure you've already spoken about that today. You've also got a unique perspective because you're also studying.
Yeah.
What do you make of, I guess, the way student journalists are being prepared or able to keep up with these changes that are happening in the industry?
Yeah, funnily enough, I think a few things were missing we could have been better prepared for. But some of it was back to basics. I think we could have done with a lot more hard news writing experience. And we can get distracted a bit sometimes, and myself and everyone perhaps needed a bit more of that during the crazy year we've just seen. But you know, some of the smaller things about having a portfolio and your own domain name and presenting yourself and having a headshot and that kind of stuff, I wish, you know, we all understood that on week one as we go and study. But HKU isn't too bad in terms of, you know, the big new things, which are data, coding, and video, and these are the obvious things that we want to get into, and where the money is and the jobs are at the moment. You know, big data sets, deriving stories from them, and being able to code and sort data. I really struggled last week when I downloaded the Ashley Madison database, and it was my computer struggled to get 10 gigabytes of stuff into a spreadsheet, and I was just searching for incriminating names, but even I still struggle with how best to have dealt with, you know, data like that and to get the story, you know, out. But it's changing. I know that this year at HKU they're spending a lot more time on code and data, but you kind of have to do a bit of everything, from writing, coding, and photography, the works nowadays. Backpack journalists, they say.
Eric, over there.
Tom, Eric Wisher, I work for AFP. You mentioned the mistakes, the grammatical errors, spelling mistakes, which we see.
Yeah, tell me if you see any.
I don't want to rub it in, but I mean, a media organization, as we all know, lives or dies on its credibility and its ability to provide accurate, clean news, clean copy to its readers. So, how difficult are you finding it? And this always comes down to the staffing. Mm. So with your budget and your situation, and you know, even for a big organization like AFP, it's very difficult to find and keep good staff in the environment. How difficult is this? How much time are you spending trying to find and keep good staff? And where are you finding your permanent staff? And maybe just as a slightly secondary question, I think Nuri Vitacci writes for you, and I think Steve Vines does too, occasionally, is that right?
Mr.
Tom
Vines.
And
so, you know, if you could answer the first one and then maybe give a slightly broader explanation of where you're getting your source material from. Okay, thanks.
The first one was about, editing. I mean, in an ideal world and in any other traditional situation, you'd have your reporter, you'd have fact checkers, you'd have lawyers as backstop somewhere in the building, copy editors, editor, and then maybe some production manager or social media person. We still have a lot of self-policing going on, and there'll be things people spot on the bus home from Cyberport, and it's extremely tough, and we recognize that, you know, our presentation and little things like that, you know, errors seeping in. We have to be super vigilant, and it's 24 hours. It's really tough, and finding those staff is it is the number one thing at the moment. It's the biggest headache before funding, actually, and we're still trying to get it right. The reporters, I think we're almost there. Everyone has a different sort of skill. Vivian has done some great stuff, original stuff with the mainland. Chris just understands Hong Kong back to front. Ryan on social media. And we've just hired our intern, Karen, who's lightning fast. But finding, you know, impenetrable backstops, you know, as things go online, it's not a skill I particularly have. It's very tough. I'm not a recruiter. I'm not an accountant, PR, or any of this stuff. But I'm having to do a lot of it. We all are. That's the next question. If anyone wants to be the Hong Kong Free Press editor. We also, you know, rely on people coming in, and we've had guest editors like Tim Hamlet, who used to be at the Standard and SCMP, and others who've come by and done workshops for us, for which we're very grateful, and the team really benefits. But we welcome that kind of support. On the second point, yeah, where we get the news, I think it's no different from anywhere else, really. Press releases, some of pickups from other media. Our own contacts, you know, original stuff, people handing us things sometimes. But probably one of the most lucrative sources is increasingly Facebook, of all things. And we have Facebook lists of hundreds of groups, politicians, NGOs, protesters, and that's on auto refresh next to our analytics in the office. And it's a concern in itself, because I think the latest HKJA report said that a lot of lawmakers in Hong Kong are bypassing the media, and they're just writing on their own blogs. We're quick to screenshot them in case they say something, you know, risque. So there's that source, and we just pile all of our potential news leads into Trello in the morning. We discuss them at 10:30, and you know, decide what to do, what to drop. At the end of the month, we look over the analytics and see what we should be doing more of and what we can do, say, less of. For instance, we were covering a lot of some of the Chinese media and what was happening at Apple Daily and the Hong Kong Daily News. But you know, our audience obviously tend not to read Chinese, so we do a lot less of those stories now. It's constantly changing, and certainly our biggest concern at the moment is the editorial stuff.
I have a question. What's your take on the crowdfunding and journalism trend, and how are you going to compete with these new arrivals? This FactWire that just scored 4 million in their crowdfunding exercise. Yeah, 4 million. I've read another one called Hong Kong 01 that's in the works.
Are they in English?
I have no idea. But there seems to be quite a few coming in, and they're essentially courting the same or similar audience and financial sources. So how do you compete?
We still covered FactWire and we reported on it, because I don't think we're really competitors. I don't know if they're going to be in English, but as a newswire, they're not so much of a threat. I think there's still room, you know, maybe for a more pro-democracy platform or something in English. So, you know, maybe more competition is good. But crowdfunding is certainly a positive trend this year. And I've tried to minimize how much we're reaching out for people to jump in again and donate, because our crowdfunding has continued. In fact, after us, we talked to Fringebacker, and they worked to put us on three different types of crowdfunding streams, whereby you can make a one-off donation. I think we still got about 40,000-50,000 last month. You can make a monthly commitment, which is, I suppose, like your Guardian membership, or you can put on an event or a sponsored activity for Hong Kong Free Press. So rather than it just being a self-encapsulated sort of one launching drive for funding, it will probably be ongoing, as it is for us, and maybe like NPR and others, we will have yearly or bi-yearly drives for crowdfunding. But I can see people may get fatigued with it, so we also want to bring on other forms of income and try and be as self-sustaining as we can.
Any more questions from the floor? Ooh, lady there.
Thank you. Tom, you mentioned that the Information Services Department had barred you from receiving their press releases.
Yeah.
Will you be fighting that?
Yeah. As much as we can. We've complained to these guys, the FZZ and some other journalist watchdogs. I think we were on RTHK recently, kicking up a fuss. I mean, I think a few years ago, Charles Mock put it to LegCo, but it needs updating, right? I don't know if it's political because they want to avoid some of the more politicized online outlets, or whether it's simply, you know, a case of Hong Kong government and its Internet Explorer, and you know, it can be quite outdated with its technology, and they just don't realize. But it can't go on, can it? I mean, it's not the 90s. It needs to be updated, and I feel we've done everything right. It's just crazy that we're, you know, 10, 15 minutes behind. You know, they will then put it on their website and Twitter feed, but that amount of time is fatal, you know, when there's competition. So I'm hoping it will be it's like a campaign point for us, I guess.
Any more questions? This is the last question.
Hi, Tom. You mentioned the thing that's kind of critical both to success and ongoing funding, which is traffic. And the live heartbeat that you were showing up in the corner there. How do you draw the line, if you like, between the temptation to put clickbait out to ensure that you reach that target to actually maintaining the standard that you're talking about?
Yeah.
Where do you make that decision?
Using the word shocking or something? I don't know, there is a banned list of clickbait terms which we've got bookmarked, but I mean, clickbait is very specifically when you've misled somebody and you've promised something and under-delivered as they've clicked. I think there's intelligent ways of getting people from social media into your site, and Vox and Mike.com and Quartz are ones we would look to. But yeah, we have to kind of have some discipline, because we know if we insert certain words or present things in a certain way, and we know from studies that what you put in the headline and the featured image, particularly on Facebook, is what drives people to the site. But it's discipline and you know, spotting something as it goes through the Trello system, that let's not push this, or we've done too much of that today, or simply, you know, killing it. But there's added pressure for us because people have donated, and putting up too much of the newswire we're looking to get at the moment, or too much of the sillier stories. You know, we could get some pushback on it, but again, if we don't, you know, some of our biggest stories, then you know, we're in danger as well. So I guess it's just a case of being disciplined, case by case.
That's all we have time for, everyone. Thanks, Tom Grundy, for the insightful
talk. Thank you.